What is up, Into the Void listeners? I'm your host, Scott Ferdella. Welcome back. Have you visited FeetSocks.com yet? Go to my Instagram, click the link in my bio to instantly get $20 off your first purchase. They have hoodies, swimwear, men's socks, women's socks, tees, and more. You can build your own boxes. They've got no-show socks, dressier socks, mid-calf socks, whatever the occasion calls for. They've got the best designs and the comfiest socks you'll ever put on your feet. So click the link in my bio and save $20 right now. I literally wear them every day. I've got almost 2 dozen pairs now. Get you some. I'm going to see if I can one take this. I have no guest today. That's right. If you're hearing this episode, that means for one reason or another, my scheduled guest bailed. So the way I try and work things is that I'll have one guest scheduled for Sunday and then another one kind of on standby in case there's an emergency or whatever. But that didn't happen this week. So it's just me. It's going to be talking to, I'm going to be talking to myself like it's conversation. It's going to get weird for sure, but we'll see how it goes. It'll be me talking to myself for, I don't know, like 30 minutes, maybe an hour. The way I did the mini-sode for 13 Reasons Why, I typed out like some cliff notes and then kind of read it and improvised a little bit of it. So it'll probably work similar to that. I have some things that I want to talk about, but anyway, so what I have absolutely no time for is people who flake with no notice. When I had employees, that's automatic grounds for dismissal. Like, if you've been scheduled or if you've committed to a time that you're supposed to be at a place and you don't show up with no call, no message, no nothing, you're dead to me. You know? It's 2018. Like, everyone is on their phones all the time. There's no excuse for that, in my opinion. It's so frustrating. So, did you take an unscheduled camping trip into the mountains? Why can't you just send a message, you know? Be professional. Anyway, the train rolls on. I thought I would take this opportunity to talk about myself, because everybody loves doing that. It's, it's going to be fun, I guess. So, one of the biggest questions that I always get asked is, how did the Cat Cafe start? So, if you're curious about that, in 2016, in April, my friend Jess and I went to Nordic Spa, and on the way there, we were getting hungry. If you've never been there, it's in Chelsea, Quebec. And we were looking for a place to eat because Nordic Spa can be hella expensive. So we just wanted to grab a quick lunch, maybe a coffee before we went in. And we went, Google Maps said that there was a Cat Cafe nearby. So, and it's literally at the time, I think it's closed now. Actually, I know it's closed now because I was in contact with them. But it's right up the road, like 2 minutes away. And we went in there and it was crazy. I had heard about cat cafes and we were just sitting there talking about it. And I was like, man, I bet this would do really well in Kingston with the student population, RMC, Queens and St. Lawrence. I thought it would do really well. And we kind of joked about it for the rest of the day while we were at Nordic. And then I got back and I kept thinking about it. And I invited her to be my partner, actually, because she's in the vet tech industry or the vet industry, so she knows about animals. And I've always been a fan of animals, and I had always wanted to be a business owner. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this. I think this is this could be a winner. So I started looking more and more into it. Of course, I made an appointment with KEDCO, as I've talked about on other podcasts. That's the Kingston Economic Development Corporation, just to get some direction, because I had never done anything like this before. So they provided me with some resources, some things to look into. They said, you know what, first, what you have to do is some market research and just see if this is a viable idea in Kingston. So I went on Facebook. Actually, I went on SurveyMonkey and did up some surveys. So I had those first, and then I needed a name for the cafe. So that was probably the hardest part, was coming up with a name. Came up with Southpaw because I wanted to inject a little bit of my own personality into the cafe. I thought, this is my own business. It should be something that I'm interested in. And Southpaw was just a perfect pun of like boxing and cats. And so once I had the name, I created a Facebook page, and that was pretty much all it took, honestly. I put out the Facebook page and shared it with a few friends of mine, and they were really excited that a cat cafe was coming to Kingston. And honestly, that it just kind of, I mean, I say viral, but it's like locally viral because it wasn't that crazy. But overnight, it was, you know, a couple hundred. I think it was about 600 likes within the first week or something like that. So that was more or less all the market research that I needed to know that it would be at least popular in the beginning. And then I started asking questions like, what types of offerings would you like to see? And what types of things do you care about? Do people care about certified organic and fair trade coffee, which it seems they did? And then would you prefer vegetarian, vegan options, beef, chicken, pork, things like that? What types of drinks would be most popular? All those types of things. And then, you know, from there it was getting funding, and that was like, you know, 3 months of my time. And then the construction phase. And during this time, I was still working. So I was working for the Limestone District School Board as an educational assistant and at the casino. If you've listened to my previous podcast with Sean Leahy, you'll know that I fucking hated that job. We can take a little side trip and talk about that job for a minute. So I worked there for 10 years. So originally, I studied hospitality and tourism management, and in that program, there was a casino operations course, and I was really into it at that time. I thought it would be a neat job. So when my program finished, when I graduated, I messaged the course coordinator, and the course instructor, not the coordinator, the course instructor of that program, and she was able to kind of get me in to the slot department. That's where I started in like 2000, I don't know, six, maybe. Yeah, I guess it'd be 2006. And I started there in the summer, in the summer for slots. It's ridiculous money. I'm just going to put them on blast right now because you're not supposed to know this, but slot attendants make a fuckload of money. Maybe not anymore. I don't know what their tips are like anymore, but we made really good money at that time, 10 years ago, because it's just cash tips. You're only, when you think about it, people on slots, if you're interacting with a slot attendant, you're only doing so when you're winning, right? So you would only really see them typically if they're paying you money. So you're always getting tips. Like if somebody gets a $1,000 jackpot, typically they'll toss the slot attendant like $5. And I mean, that's regulars. A lot of like young people, they don't know what's etiquette, so they won't necessarily tip. But yeah, it was all cash tips. And then we would get paid every other week. So once a week we would get tip out, and then on alternating weeks we'd get paid. So you're getting paid every week. So it was really, really easy to save money. And in about 6 months, I saved enough money to buy my condo, where I've been living for the last 10 years. And after that summer was over, I started at the casino as a table games dealer. And within like, I want to say 2 years, I think I started reading more. And I don't know why I got myself into this mode where like I stopped watching TV, I stopped watching the news and things like that, and I started reading more. And the more I read, the more I understood human psychology, the more I understood addictions, the more I wanted more from myself. I hated the casino environment. So maybe 2 years, 3 years in, I just kind of hit a wall where I'm somebody that needs to be challenged constantly, and the casino just wasn't doing it for me anymore. I kind of peaked at that point in table games, and I didn't see myself going any higher. It wasn't getting any more challenging, because once you've kind of mastered all the games, there are little like efficiencies you can improve on, but it doesn't allow for a whole lot of creativity. So for a person like me, it wasn't great. And there's very little you can do when you do see, like, identify problems or issues. You can't, it's a corporation, so you just have to do what they say and just fucking do your job. So I would see problem gamblers, and I'd be like, hey, I can probably help that person, or this person should be getting help or whatever. That's not the point of that place, right? You're kind of supposed to take them to rock bottom before they get help, because they want your money. And that was like a cognitive dissonance moment where you'd see this and you just kind of have to put it to the back of your mind and just do your job. And I didn't see like a light at the end of the tunnel. So I went back to school, and then things got easier for me. I mean, mentally easier. I think that's probably the most stressed I've ever been in my whole life, was going full-time through school and full-time at the casino, because I was, you know, burning the candle at both ends. I was tired all the time, but I got through it with, you know, substantial amount of student debt, finished out, got my job at the school board, and I actually really loved that position. I was I started as an educational assistant. I didn't know that I would like it, to be honest. I at the time before I started, I hated kids, and at the direction of some of my professors, they were like, I think you'd be really good at this, like community outreach type work. You should try working with kids. Like, have you considered going to the schools? I know I didn't want to work with ex-offenders, because as I said in previous podcasts, I have done that. I did in my placement. I worked with parolees, people on probation. I worked with high-risk sex offenders. Which was, you know, I don't feel one way or another about that. I don't, it was tough work, but it wasn't like emotionally triggering for me. It was just, there's not a whole lot you can do for certain people. Like, I'm of the mind that I think most people have the ability to change, but most people don't, you know? When it comes to high-risk sex offenders, in my opinion, that's like, it's as fucked up as this is to say, it might be unpopular, but it's almost like a sexual preference. That's kind of the way I've come to see it, where it's like trying to tell somebody, you know, don't be attracted to a member of the same sex, don't be gay, because something has happened in their sex. Not to equate this with being homosexual, but when it comes to pedophiles, something has stunted their sexual maturity, and the whatever they're attracted to will probably, if it's able to be affected, would take years and years of therapy to correct, you know? So like, how do you tell someone, don't be attracted to what you're attracted to? How do you talk that out of somebody? How do you modify that? It's such an uphill battle, and I don't know that any place anywhere in the world has an answer for that, other than, you know, like chemical castration or physical castration or whatever. So that's such a tough thing to deal with and to correct for. So to me, that's another one of those things where it's like, all right, well, if we can't do anything with these people, what are we doing? Just managing them? And that wasn't encouraging to me. Also, it's kind of a gross, like, they're very deceptive people in general. Because if that's the type of illness that you have, if that's the type of thing that you're attracted to, they're typically very deceptive, because they know how awful it is. So they have to lie a lot of the time to hide who they are. So they're a difficult population to work with, and I didn't really enjoy it at all. And then same with kind of parolees. They've, through their own life choices and institutionalization, that's what they've gotten used to. So you're not really going to improve them necessarily. Some people you will, you know, there's always anomalies or outliers, but for the most part, if a dude's just done like a 7-year stretch, you're not changing his mind now. You're not going to make him a better person. You might make incremental improvements, sure, which is rewarding in its own way, but they're an adult. It's harder for me to have empathy for someone who's lived a whole life and then continues to fuck up and whatever else. It's harder for me to be compassionate towards those types of people. But then it comes to working with kids, and I guess my philosophy was, if you can get them, you know, while they're still developing and correct their path or give them, like, plant seeds of you know, the type of compassion and open-mindedness that would lead to being a better person, then that seems like a better place to start. Like, it's really rewarding. And not only that, but, like, you can also see when you're working, especially as an educational assistant, you're working with kids who have fine motor, gross motor skills issues. They've got mental health issues. They've got issues dealing with their own anxiety. And you can, from the start of the semester in September to the end of the semester in June, you see massive improvements, especially with young kids from, you know, age 4 to 6, like in kindergarten, because they're just little sponges at that time. So they'll come in and they don't know how to write their name in September. And then by the end of June, you know, they know all their numbers, all their letters, that they know how to be friends with people without punching them in the face or whatever. Like, they have appropriate reactions to frustration, and a lot of that is due to the work that we do, and so that's really, really rewarding. I was really passionate about that for a long time, but after I got out of it, I realized how ridiculously stressful that job is. It takes a lot out of you. It's if I could go back, I mean, I might, but I probably won't, because it's just thinking about it is exhausting, having to go back to that. It takes so much patience and understanding to be around those types of kids all day, and you try not to take it personally, but it's like they're emotionally and verbally abusive constantly, because they don't know any better. They're just kids, but it does chip away at you. So it's a tough job, man. Kudos, shout out to all the EAs, not only getting, like, physically assaulted, but, you know, just verbally berated day in, day out, every day, and you don't hear about it, and just underpaid. That was the other thing, is EA hours, for those of you who don't know, with the Limestone Board anyways, only 33 hours a week. That's full time, is 33 hours, so that's tough to make a living on that at 33 hours. That's why I stuck with having a second job for so long. This 33 hours just isn't enough to pay bills sometimes. And not only that, but special education is always the first thing to get cut when budget cuts come down in education. Even though there's just a growing need for spec ed, because in every single classroom I was in, there was at least one child on the spectrum or one child with behavioral issues in every classroom. And teachers typically aren't trained for those types of things. They're not trained in mental health issues. They're trained for classroom management and how to deliver curriculum and things like that. But they're not trained on specific disorders unless they take additional courses most of the time. Or if maybe they have a background in it or whatever, they have a family member that has something. But most of the time, yeah, I saw a lot of, you know, I won't call anybody out, but they need educational assistance. So anyway, it's a frustrating place to be in, but it was great work. It was wonderful. And then I started at the cafe, and it was stressful in a whole different way, because you're a business owner and you're responsible for absolutely every little thing. Probably close to the most stressed I've ever been, next to that period in college where I had fuck all for money. But that was that. So that's my work experience pre-cafe and then cafe. And now I slap roofs. Now I am selling cars for Petrie Ford. So if you need a vehicle, come see me. I'll hook you up. I like traveling. I've traveled a lot in my time. When I was 18 years old at the... No, I wasn't 18. I was maybe 20. But yeah, I guess when I was 19 years old, what kind of was the catalyst for this was I studied graphic design for about a year. I used to be really artistic. I used to draw a lot and paint a lot and all that stuff. And so I studied graphic design. And this is when I was 18. So this is 17 years ago. No, 12 years ago. Not that old. It's 12 years ago when the internet wasn't as big as it is. Websites were still fairly non-user friendly. Like, you had to get a web designer at the time. And I wanted to get in on that. I liked graphic design. I did a lot of stuff on my own. I loved, like, I'm fairly tech savvy. I used to be on my computer all the time. And so I studied graphic design, and it just wasn't what I thought. It's a shitload of work, and it was the only time in my life where I actually quit something. And it was a really gross feeling. I allowed myself to quit, and it didn't represent my best effort, and that was an eye-opening moment for me. I still remember that feeling. I dropped out, and that was me, like, kind of admitting defeat. And I didn't feel the same way when the cafe closed at all. It's different when you put in your best effort. But I don't think that when I quit graphic design, it represented my best effort. I think I just quit because it was hard. It was too difficult, and I didn't want to continue. And I wasn't even getting bad grades. It was a lot of work, and I was partying a lot, and I just quit. So that was a really rotten feeling that I had, and I decided, I remember sitting in the car, I was driving down, like, Days Road, I think, with my mom, and I was like, I think I want to travel. And she's like, okay, well, do it then. So over the next, like, 6 months, I worked at StarTech, and I saved up a bunch of money, and I just traveled for 3 months. I had never even been to an airport before. And I remember it was scary as shit. But I did it all myself, booked the itinerary. I hopped on a, what was it? Was it even a, might have been a Greyhound, but I feel like, yeah, I think it was just a Greyhound at that time, because I don't think, what's that fucking bus company? What is their name? They're super cheap. Anyway, new bus company. I'm sure you know it. You're probably screaming at your phone right now. But, it was a Greyhound. Hopped on a Greyhound to Toronto. Went to Lester B. Pearson. Hopped on a plane to London. So the itinerary was I would land in London. Spent 2 weeks there. And then went to Belgium. Where did I go? Belgium. The Netherlands. I went to Germany, Poland, Austria, Italy, France, the Czech Republic. I can't remember where else. Bunch of places. Pretty much everywhere in Western Europe. Some of Eastern Europe. Not very much. But it was a good time. It was a lot of stories. So it was a long time ago. I would love to go back. My favorite place in Europe would be Italy, I think. I think Italy was the most fun for me. I'm a huge lover of history, and Italy is beautiful. If you've never been there, it's just so historic. Like, there's so much. I went to Rome for about 8 days, I think, and you could spend easily 2 weeks or more just traveling around in Rome and seeing all the different things. It's mind-blowing that it's there's so much to see that's so fucking old. There's stuff that's like 2,000 years old next to modern buildings. You know, the Colosseum is there, and then people are still just plugging away at their jobs. You know, Starbucks or whatever. It's such an interesting juxtaposition of things. And then Venice was fun, but to be honest, Venice is kind of boring. It's neat, and everyone should see it. It's a really gorgeous, like, beautiful, kind of picturesque, fairy tale type city, because it's a city on water. There's no vehicles in the city. It's all boats. stray dogs everywhere, at least there was 12 years ago. All the, if you look at the tops of the buildings, they're all kind of tilting inwards because everything's sinking slowly. But after, I think I was there for like 4 days, I slept in a church for most of it. There's nothing to do. I don't know. I found it a little boring. Same with France, or Paris, actually. I went to Paris, loved it, loved the people that I met there, but it, that's how I felt about that. It was just dirty, and I don't know. There are better cities. Rome was better. I really like Bruges. Again, got a little boring, but if you, okay, watch, I think it's on Netflix, but watch the movie In Bruges, and that's exactly how you feel about Bruges, like to a T. That's exactly how you feel about it. You're of two minds. It's this beautiful city, very picturesque, little, tiny little city. You can walk the perimeter of the city in like 2 hours. It's this historic medieval little place with canals at the exits, so it's kind of like, it's almost like its own little island, and it's got this crazy little watchtower in the middle, clock tower you go up that's featured in the movie. It's cobblestone streets, like, just gorgeous historic city. Boring as fuck. I'll never forget one of my last days in Bruges. So, in the hostels that you stay at, if you've never stayed in a hostel, particularly in Europe, they're all, well, not all of them, but some of them are co-ed. So you're staying with guys or girls, and, you know, you can get like a 4-person bunk room, 6, 12, whatever. So I think I was staying in a room with at least 4 beds, probably. And I was staying with this girl was in my room, and, you know, everybody's friendly there for the most part. So we were drinking the night before, and nice enough girl, but just didn't care so much for the personal hygiene, you know? You know, she was just a little dirty, a little stinky, just kind of a gross human. The fact that she's female had nothing to do with it. She's just kind of gross. Like, it'd be the same thing if it was a dude. But anyway, it was like my last day in Bruges, and I'm laying in bed, and she was on one of the other bunks or whatever, and I'm like, I had kept a travel journal, so I don't know if I was writing at the time, but I remember, like, looking out the window, the sun's coming in. It's kind of forming like a picture in my mind. It's nice and warm, like I'm catching the sun. I see like the windmills out my window, and it's just silence and it's peaceful. And then, you know, she's sleeping in the other bed, and I'm looking out the window, and she just fucking farts in her sleep. And I was like, God damn it. How dare you ruin this moment for me? Oh, God. I still think about that laugh. This is a perfect moment for me. My last few days in Europe. Fucking fart ruins it. Ugh, people are hilarious. Oh, man. Yeah, a lot of interesting people I met over there. That's a good time. There's still some cringy stuff that I think about, that I was thinking about today. So I was watching these In My Feelings Challenge, hashtag In My Feelings Challenge, if you've seen those. 90% of those are so cringy. They're just so cringy. And I was thinking about, well, the people dancing in those videos that are not good dancers at all, and they're just attractive people, and nobody told them. So I was telling my friend about this. There's only two types of challenges that are acceptable in that challenge. So you're either a guy who's making it funny, because guys can't do that challenge. Unless you are a phenomenal dancer, you shouldn't be doing that challenge because it's fucking cringy. Otherwise, make it funny. Because I've seen some where dudes are getting, like, tossed off. Like, they'll jump out of the car and dance a little bit. And then somebody, like, bump into them and toss them off a bridge. I saw that one. One dude, like, tried too hard and got hit by a car. But it was, like, his buddy driving the car. So it's just, you just try hard, you know. You're just trying way too hard to be funny. And then all the female ones, some of them are legit good dancers, and that's like, I would say, 10% of the population that are doing those challenges. And the rest are hard to watch, you know? Stop it. If you're gonna, I mean, whatever, just do it. It's dancing, it's whatever. Have fun with it, I don't care. But you can tell the ones that are like trying to be sexy and it's not coming off that way. It's just, it makes you clench a little bit. That's all. So there's that. And I'm a connoisseur. I've seen a few of those, but I follow a lot of like ratchet video accounts on Instagram, so I see them a lot. Shout out to Derek Lewis. If you guys aren't familiar with Derek Lewis, he is a UFC heavyweight, just fought Francis Ngannou in a pretty garbage fight, but he could kick my ass, so who am I to, you know, compare myself? Got in the octagon with his underwear on, he's like 300 pounds. Good for you, sir. Good for you. You're making way more money than me, and you're a better athlete than me. Good for you. Terrible fight, though, but good for you. Anyway, his Instagram, at Derek Lewis, I think it is his name is The Black Beast. So look it up. He like I said, he's a UFC heavyweight fighter, but all he ever posts is crazy videos from Instagram, like short, you know, 1 minute clips of videos. Awesome material, like gold internet. It's brilliant. Another one is The Inside Drop. If you guys are not following them, shout out to them. I don't get anything from them, but I promote them because they have, more often than not, some of their videos are weird and just off-brand, but it's really cutting-edge news. That's one of the best things. I remember when Twitter came out, this was one of their biggest benefits, was how quickly they could put out the news. And this is the benefit of this Inside Drop account, is they're always first when it comes to breaking news. Like I've said this before, but that XXXTentacion, when he was shot, it was minutes after he was shot that this footage started getting shared around the internet. And I first saw it on the Inside Drop. And there's a lot of stuff like that, and really kind of off the beaten path news. They have a lot of racial tension and stuff like that, I think. That's somewhat of their focus, which I'm kind of tired of seeing. I know it's a thing and we have to acknowledge it, but like, it's just everywhere in the media these days, the divisiveness of black versus white or whatever, white versus Hispanic. But I also follow Tank's Good News, if you haven't followed that, because sometimes you need a little good news in your life, you know. Tank's Good News is Tank Sinatra, if you guys don't follow that account. He posts some really good memes, and his Tank's Good News is a massive account now because I think people like just the idea of it. All he posts is good news stories. So just like when the Thai kids got rescued from the cave, he was updating about that. And, you know, no car crashes, no racial tension, just like dog saves infant or I don't even know. I can't even give you an example, but just all good stories. So go follow that account too. That's probably it for me. I'm tired of hearing my own voice. If you guys like these episodes, me just talking to myself, I'm thinking of a format that I can do that would be more accommodating for just a single person episode, because occasionally, yeah, my guests bail, and it would be handy to have a format ready so that I can just do the show myself and not have to depend on other people. I fucking hate depending on other people, because this is what you get. This is what happens. They bail, and then potentially this episode this week would be trashed because somebody fucking slept in or whatever, you know? That's so frustrating to me. Just do your fucking job. Just kidding. I really am not that bitter because I have contingencies. That's why I do these episodes. I have these episodes prepared. So I'm going to play with the format, and maybe I'm going to start paying more attention to the news and making note of it. And it'll be kind of like a weekly news update type thing, or What I would love to do is start building a community around these types of episodes, or just the episodes in general, where you guys can write questions in or just make comments to participate more in the conversation. That was kind of the goal from the very beginning, but I've kind of been slacking on that. So if you guys are interested in participating in the conversation, send me a DM, you know? Tell me what you'd like to hear. If it's like more local Kingston news, I can dig into that. If it's more world news, because personally, that's how I get most of my news, is just from listening to podcasts and just from them going through daily events across the week. I figure out kind of I can piece together what's going on in the world just from listening to podcasts. I don't kind of watch the news. And this way I get opinions from people that I respect and enjoy listening to, as opposed to some fucking corporate shill on CNN who I don't know what their agenda is. So that's how I like absorbing my news now. That and Instagram, of course. If you guys are interested in that, let me know. That's it. That's all I got today. So this has been Scott Ferdella. If you want to reach me, it's at Scott Ferdella or at Into the Void Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week, hopefully with a guest. Maybe not. We'll see. Maybe just scrap guests altogether. Who knows? You guys have fucking bittered me. Just kidding. Love you guys. Bye.